All right, we're ready for Deuteronomy chapters 3 and 4. This will finish the first sermon of Moses, as there are three or four sermons, I think four. But either way, everybody divides it at verse or chapter 4, so we're finishing at least the first sermon, however you divide the book. Here we are in the first section. This is the outline we're following, the historical concerns as Moses looks back. That's not the only thing that he does. But this is the historical section where he is looking back. Here's what's been done. Here's where we've been. Here's what's been accomplished. And we'll see the purpose for that here in just a moment. Subdividing that a little bit, this will get us through the first sermon. He talks about the tragedy of unbelief in chapter 1. This is per Wisby's outline. And then 2 and 3, that's where we still are. We've looked at the victory over Sihon. Today we'll look at victory over Og. So here's the journeys and the victories. And then he'll talk about the closing appeal to obey the Word of God. We only have two chapters to remember by way of review. So chapter 1 was, taking from Sinai. That's where the review starts. They started in Egypt, but this review starts at Sinai where the law was given and brings them up to Kadesh. What happened at Kadesh? That's where they sent spies into the land. And that was the sour turning point, wasn't it? All right, now in chapter 2, what's it about? Picks up at Kadesh. Wilderness wanderings from Kadesh. And then finally here is victory over Sihon. And that's where chapter 2 lops off, and we're ready to pick up in chapter 3. So here's what happens in chapter 3 in answer to question 1, a short summary of chapter 3. There is the review of the victory over Og. There is the division of the land on the east side of Jordan, and then that Moses is forbidden to enter. All three things, nothing new here that we haven't seen in the book of Numbers, but there's a purpose for it being mentioned here in the sermon. I was thinking earlier today about what's the purpose of this victory over Og being reviewed. They've already heard this. They already know it. They lived through that. And so Moses' first speech is to review their history. And part of the purpose of reviewing their history is not just to know your history. They need to know their history. But to encourage them of what they're able to do in the future. Does that make sense? It's kind of like a coach. Most of all of you know I'm not a ball fan, but I can imagine a coach. He's got a football team ready to play, and they think, we can't beat this team. It's an undefeated team. And if he reminds them, you remember 3 weeks ago, We had a contest, and we in that game, we were fighting a undefeated team, and we beat them. Last year, we had two times we defeated an undefeated team. Does that make sense? If he encourages them, you've done it in the past, you can do that in the future. That's what he's trying to say concerning Og and the victory over Og. We'll see more about that as we go forward. So let's start with this victory over Og in verses 1 through 11, and I want to learn four things from that we'll summarize here in a moment. We'll try to flag them as we go along. This is the land of Palestine. Here we have the Dead Sea down here, and we have the Sea of Galilee. This region up here is circled is the kingdom of Og. And so he reviews that. So we turned, and he said, we came to the king of Bashan, king of Og, and there was a battle at the battle was at Edrei, and that's where the battle took place. That's at the bottom of the circle there. Now, here's the first thing I want us to, well, first of all, he says, don't fear him. In other words, you're going in and you're going to confront conflict. Now, they had conflict previous to this as they had left Kadesh. It didn't go so well. But when they got to Sihon, God said, I'm going to give Sihon to you. So they got Sihon and his kingdom. So they come up here to the kingdom of Bashan or the kingdom of Og. And God says, you're going to get him too. But now we'll get to that in a moment. But the reason he says, do not fear him is because I'm going to give him to you. Here's the difference. God rules in the kingdoms of men. I'm going to let you take him. I'm going to deliver him into your hand. That's what's going to happen. So here's the first thing, and we'll list these in a moment, so don't worry about writing these down. There are four things that I learned from this verse 1 through 11, the speech about Og. And the first one is God makes a promise and God fulfills his promise. Does that make sense? So here's what God said. God said, I have delivered him and all his people and his land into your hand. So him, his people, and his land, I'm giving to you. Notice, I have delivered. At the time God said that, he had not delivered that. That's what we call prophetic perfect. What's prophetic perfect? Say again. It's going to happen. He speaks of things in the future in past tense. That's prophetic perfect. And so God speaks of things that are not as though they are. Romans 4 talks about that. And so that's the assurance of this promise. God said, I have delivered him into your hand. Well, he hadn't yet, but he's going to. That's the point. Just as I did with Sihon. So now verse 3. So, this is a Moses lecturing the people. So what happened? God delivered him into his hand. And we attacked him until there was no survivors. How successful was it? Verse 4. Very successful. We took all of his cities. How many cities were there? 60 cities we took. Well, what about those cities? Verse 5. Yeah, these are not pushover cities. You know, it's not like, well, we went and took Og, but, you know, they were just, the nation was in shambles and he didn't have any, there was not a city around that had any fortification. No, these were fortified cities. The cities had high walls, not just walls, but high walls and gates and bars. And you still took the cities, took 60 of them. And so he said, we utterly took them. And so now let's notice that verse, we took all of the livestock. We utterly destroyed every man, woman, child, etc. Now look at verse 8. Verse 8 talks about the region that was taken. And so we took the land. It was in the king of the Amorites from Sihon to Og, from the river Arnon to Mount Hermon. All right? So from Arnon is right down here. If I can, it's not what I want. Right here. Arnon is about right in here where my little dot is going. That's Arnon, and here's Mount Hermon. So we took this whole region right here, that whole region we took. From Sihon to Og, we took every bit of that. So here's a large territory that we took. Now let's start at verse 11. He's still talking in 9 and 10 about the large territory. So we took all the cities of the kingdom of Og. We took all the cities of Sihon. And so we took all of that. Large area. We're going to summarize that in a moment. What do you learn from verse 10 and 11? Yeah, he was a giant. Og was a remained of the remnant of the giants. So the giants were going away. They're still giants going to face once they cross the river, because they'd already spied them out and seen them, hadn't they? Chapter 13 of Numbers. So they got some more giants to go. That's not the end of the giants. We'll see giants later. But he's part of the remnant of the giants on that side of the river. And we don't know his size, but he had a large bed. How big was his bed? Yeah, it's 13 and a half feet long and 6 feet wide. That's bigger than a California king, isn't it? Large bed, which suggests the point of that is that here is a large giant. In other words, he's large in stature, is the idea that he required a large bed. So that tells us something of his size. All right, now let's learn some things here that we just saw from that. The review of Og reassures Israel they can conquer in the future. So this is not just a history lesson. Hey, let's remember what happened over there with Og. And y'all need to know your history. Well, they need to know their history. But I think Moses is making a point. He's preaching a sermon. And his point is, I want you to learn these 4 points, that the fact that what you have done in the past gives us assurance you can do that in the future. We're on the verge within 30 days of going across the land. I mean, going across the river into the new land and conquer that land. There's already been fear of that land. So here's the 4 things. God made promises and he fulfilled his promise. He said he'd give us Sihon, we got Sihon. God said he'd give us Og, we got Og. If God says he'll give us the land of Canaan, we're going to get land of Canaan. That makes sense? Secondly, the cities that we were taking were fortified. So don't be afraid when you get over there and you see a walled city and you see bars and you see high walls. The first city they take is going to have high walls, isn't it? Jericho, doesn't it have high walls? A double wall, in fact. There's an inner wall and an outer wall. And then the third thing, the area they conquered was a large area. You begin to think, we're going to go across, and it's going to be a large area to take. We've already taken a large area from Arnon to Mount Hermon. That's a big territory. All right? The fourth thing to learn, you overcame giants. Don't you remember Og? Remember how big he was? Remember his bed? Yeah, he's a giant. You overcame giants in the past, you can overcome giants in the future. That was an assuring lesson. That's a powerful point of his sermon. Questions or comments? Larry.
That was a very, probably the reason why the 12 spies never would take the land in the first place, because they were giants. They were fortified cities. And here he's showing, hey, you're scared about getting back in 140 years. You just won with me here. You don't have to be like your foremost.
Good point. Good point. Yeah. Yeah. And from one standpoint, it was because God was with him. You follow God and it's going to work. It's like taking Jericho. You march around the city once a day for 6 days. You do what God says and it's going to fall. And they could have taken it coming in from Kadesh, but they rebelled. All right. That's verses 1 to 7. So that's a powerful point, you think of his sermon, that he's driven home four evidences. You can overcome. You can conquer the land. Stick with God, stick with Joshua, things are going to be all right. All right, let's talk about the division of the land on the east side of Jordan. Now, we've seen this before. This is not new information. We're going to see the land was given to 2.5 tribes, and then we'll see instructions to go fight for that land. So let's look at verses 12 to 17 about going in and this land being given to 2.5 tribes. He's talking about this land over here to Reuben, Gad, and the half a tribe of Manasseh. So here's the Arnon River, and here's Mount Hermon. This is the territory that was taken from Sihon and Og, and so it was these 2.5 tribes that we're talking about and what they're going to receive. All right, let's work through verses 12 through verse 17 here and talk about this section. Then we'll look at the instructions. I want us to flag verse 13. Now, what verses 12 to 17 basically said, and I'm not going to go through every detail of that he's basically describing the land that we have mapped out here. That this was the land that was given to, and he mentions the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the tribe, half the tribe of Manasseh. But at the end of verse 13, all the region, he said, was called the land of the giants. Here again, he makes the point that he'd made earlier in verses 11 and 10 and 11, that we conquered the land of the giants. This was called the land of the giants, just like the southern part over here of Judah that they had spied out. There were giants in the land. That's what I wanted you to see. So I'm just going to flag at verse 14, he mentions Manasseh, he mentions Reuben at 16 and Gad at 16, and this was the plain that they got from that went all the way from the border of up above the Sea of Galilee, Chinnereth, I think he calls it here in the text, and down to the river Arnon. Just describes the territories, all that does. Now, more interested now at verses 18 to 22. See, that was the land that was given to them, and they wanted that land. They asked if they could settle over there. So what happens in 18 to 22 now? Moses reminds them of a discussion they've already had. All right, yes, very good. Look at verse 18. It said, the Lord gave you this land, and all of you men of valor shall cross over, armed before your brethren, the children of Israel. So in other words, they'd ask, can we settle on this side? Now, that's not all discussed right here, but we saw that in the book of Numbers. Can we settle on this side? And Moses wasn't happy about that, but he said, you can settle here if fighting men go over and fight until that battle is completely finished. Then you can come back. So here he says, you're going to leave your livestock and your children, because your livestock is many, and leave your children and your wives here, etc. Until the Lord has given rest to your brethren, I'm reading it verse 20, as to you, until you've conquered all of that land, And then you can come back over here. So when they get across the land that we just mentioned here, this land that we just talked about, they're going to go in. There's going to be a campaign in the middle. There's going to be a campaign to the north and a campaign to the south till they've conquered the whole land. And when you've conquered that, then you can come back, that each of you may, verse 20, return to his possession which I have given you. But you're not coming back till the battle is done. You're going to go help them fight. Now then, verse 21 is assurance. What do you see at verse 21? I commanded Joshua, your eyes have seen all that the Lord your God has done to these two kings, talking about Sihon and Og. Yes. You have seen all that God has done, so the Lord will do to all the kingdoms through which you'll pass. See, here's the point of this part of his sermon. What I'm telling, reminding you about Og and Sihon, if God was with you then, God will be with you over there. That's what I told Joshua. Does that make sense? It's not just a history lesson. There's a practical thing to be learned. Now, verse 22, to conclude that section, you must not fear them. Why? The Lord is the one who fights for you. Here's why you need to stick with it. Here's why you need to stick with God. Here's why you need to hear to the Word. Here's why you need to be obedient, chapter 4. It's because the Lord's fighting for you. If the Lord's with you, no one can be against you. Romans 8. Make sense? Okay, good point. Yes, he will. The NET is at times kind of wooden, but to me it always seems to hit to the real heart of what the text is talking about. I like using it as a comparative. Very good. It is one of those wooden translations in many places at least. All right, yeah, he will personally fight for you. The Lord's going to go fight for y'all on the other side. In other words, you listen to him, you follow him, and this victory is won. Is that any different now? No, it's no different. You're fighting against Satan. Is God just going to fight him for us? No, we have to fight. But the fight will be successful if I do it the way the Lord tells me to. And if I decide I'm going to fight it my way, then it's not going to work. But if I decide I'm going to listen to the Lord and whatever he says do to fight Satan, then I can fight Satan. I can resist. And the Lord's going to fight for me. And it's going to be successful. And it's going to work. We can kill Satan and fight him just like we can did Og or Sihon. All right, let's pick up at verse 23 now. Let's see, where did I want to go next? Yes. Let's pick up at verse 23. Moses is forbidden to enter. Now, we have several things to talk about in this section, though it's a short section. And notice he said that I pleaded with the Lord at the time, saying, O Lord, if you have begun to show your servant your greatness and your mighty hand. That mighty hand is, I flagged that in my mind in this context of the conquering of the land. You've shown, in other words, God, you've played a strong hand here. You have displayed your strength and your power and your might. And I pray, let me cross over and see the good land beyond the Jordan. Do you take that's after God had already told him he wasn't going to enter? I think so. And so he said, at that time, I prayed to God. I asked for God, and I'm paraphrasing, to reconsider and let me go across to the land. Please let me go. And what do you see at verse 26? The Lord would not agree to that. The Lord was angry with me on your account. We're coming back to that. We talked about that last time. We're going to flag some things there. But what did the Lord say to shut the conversation down? Yeah, this discussion is over. Have you ever had a conversation where somebody said, this is over? We're not talking about this anymore. That's what God said. This is enough. No more said about that. We're done talking about that. You're not going. You're not going into the land. And so he told him to go up to Pisgah and lift up your eyes and told him to do what? Look all around, to the north, south, east, and west. Or the south, east, and north, that is, and see all the land, and command Joshua and encourage and strengthen him. Why? He's going to be the leader. And for you shall not cross over Jordan. You're not going to be the leader. You encourage Joshua, and he shall cause the people to inherit the land. So we stayed in the valley opposite Beth Peor. All right, that's right here is where we are. And that's where they're going to stay, and that's where he's going to, that's in the region of Mount Nebo. So that's where he's going to die. So he said, that's where we stayed. So God said, you're not going to see it. Yeah, I mean, you're going to see the land, but you're not going. And I want to back up to verse 26 now. And if we weren't here last time, you might connect. This is helpful for me. It may not be for you. Chapter 1 in verse 37, the same phrase is found. He said that God would not, God was angry with me on your account. And so here we have in chapter 3, 26, and we're going to see it again in 4, 21. So if you want to flag all those verses, about to put those up on the screen here. Deuteronomy 1, 37, 3, 26, 4, 21, and similar phrase found over in Psalm 106. On your sake, on your account, or because of you. Now we presented three possibilities that either in all of this, Moses is blaming them, saying, I'm not responsible. And we struck that one down real quick. That leaves only the other two, and I don't know that we have to choose between the two. Probably a blending of those two concepts. And that is, your sin was the occasion for me to sin, and the punishment was the same for God to be fair. In other words, Israel sinned. God wouldn't let them enter, so they had to walk for 40 years. Moses sinned too. It's not fair to let him go in when he's done the same kind of thing, and so God won't let him enter. Does that make sense? Couple of points to be made. I learned from that there's no exception. This is from a sermon on that very phrase. Sin's not to be overlooked. Moses was a prophet, a leader, appointed of God, and it mattered little of who he was. He rebelled, and he's going to pay the price. No one's indispensable. It's not like I got to have Moses. Moses is my leader. I've got to have him. He's indispensable. Joshua can do the job. We can make it without Moses. The church can make it without you too, without me. None of us are indispensable. Does that make sense? Powerful lesson, humbling lesson. Here's another lesson I learned from that. Personal responsibility. While Moses may have been prompted from their sin, the responsibility was pointed right at him. God said he was to blame. Anything Moses says about because of you doesn't remove any blame. You may cause me to sin, but I'm to blame. Does that make sense? I learned that from this context. Others may provoke sin, and I think that's what Moses is saying. You provoke me. Israel's sin led to him and promoted his sin. It was the occasion, but that did not and cannot shirk his responsibility, as Merle said in his comments on chapter 3 and verse 26. And then I think the point here is, to be fair, God. I think Moses is presenting, God's a fair God. Your previous generation has died off, couldn't enter because they sinned. And look, I'm not going either because of what I did. Does that make sense? That's fair. God is just. He's a fair God. Otherwise, there's no fairness. Make sense? Practical stuff. Yes, sir. Consequences still go, yes. I think that's a good point. One can be forgiven and still bear consequences for sin. That is absolutely true. Moses certainly did. For your sake. That's an interesting phrase. To be fair and just in dealing with you, God will not let me enter. So there at Beth Peor is where we are now. Now let's go to chapter 4. And in chapter 4, we haven't got too many questions, or any for that matter, have we? Let's go back to question 6. Concerning that request that Moses made, what do you learn about prayer from that incident? Sometimes the answer is no. Somebody said something. Good point. He has in the past.
He has
changed God's mind. Good point. And so he makes an appeal. Maybe he was thinking, I can persuade God. But sometimes the thing to learn is the answer is no. Doesn't mean God's not answering our prayer. God did answer his prayer. God said, no. You're not going. I don't want to hear more about that. Now, while God may not speak directly to you, God's answer may be, in essence, no. Quit talking to me about that because I am not going to answer it that way. And like you want me to. And so sometimes the answer is no. All right, let's move on. Question number 7. Was the word of God to be treated? Verse 2. All right, do not add to or take from it. Sounds very familiar, doesn't it? Chapter 4 brings this first sermon to a close. Now, there's disagreement over where some of the other sermons divide. depending on, do you think it's three, do you think it's four? We talked about that last time. Everybody agrees the first sermon ends at chapter four. And so this is the end of the first sermon. And many think, as we put here, verses 44 is kind of an introduction to the next sermon. So this sermon basically ends at verse 43 or maybe verse 40. But be that as it may, he ends here in chapter 4. It focuses on the necessity of obedience. He's gone back in history. Here's been rebellion. Here's been problems. Here's victory if you follow God. And so here's the point. If you're going to cross over and be successful in this conquest, you're going to have to be obedient to God. And that's his point. So let's see what he says. He talks, first of all, about respect for the law. And there are four things we want to flag as we go along. So he said, O Israel, listen to the statutes and the judgments. And we'll see more about the statutes and the judgments and the commandments. We'll say more about that when we get to chapter 6. I'm going to kind of save my comments on the distinction between a commandment and a statute and a judgment. They all refer to the commands of God. Some are referring to the fact it's a law, others that it's given by God, and others have to do with that there are consequences. But anyway, we'll talk about that in chapter 6. Here we go. First, the first thing that he mentions here, that do not add to the word which I command you, nor take anything from it, that you may keep the commandments which the Lord your God, which I command you. You might put a marginal note if you don't already have this in your Bible to see chapter 12, verse 32. That principle is repeated in chapter 12 in another sermon. So this is not the last time he's going to mention that. Proverbs 30, which is not one of Moses' sermons. Proverbs 36 makes the same point. And then the all-familiar text, Revelation 22, 18 and 19, yes. So I often like to make the point that from the beginning, this is not the first book, but this is in the first section of the Bible, the Pentateuch, the books of Moses, from the beginning of the Bible to the end of the Bible, and right in the middle, Proverbs, God has said, don't add to and don't take away. Don't alter, don't change it. How could they add to it? By requiring something that did not require. And maybe the high priest begins to command them to do something God didn't tell them to do, or Moses tells them to do something, or Joshua tells them something. How could they take away from it? Yeah, by failing to give emphasis to a law that God had given. We can do the same thing today. So don't alter it, don't change it. All right, verses 3 to 8 now. And this is one, watch for this word, not only here, but all through our study of Deuteronomy. There's two words I want you to watch for. Fear, as it's directed toward God, and the other one is the word careful. We've got careful at verse 6. You've seen what the Lord did at Baal Peor. Oh, this is interesting. What happened at Baal Peor? All right. This is Numbers 25. Remember that case where Balaam and Balak were in by the time we get to chapter 25, they're in cahoots with one another, and the people are persuaded and taken away by the adulterous women. Remember that? Lost 24,000. That's the story we're talking about right here. Remember what happened over at Baal Peor? But you held fast today, every one of you. In other words, the Lord destroyed many among you. They lost 24,000. But those that were there listening to Moses now, they held fast. They weren't part of those that were guilty. And surely I have taught you the statutes and the commandments that you should act accordingly. Now here's our point. Verse 6. Therefore be careful to observe them. All right. What does he mean by that? Yeah, don't just go at the commandments of God. And I think people do this today. They go at the commandments of God in a careless way, just kind of a general direct thrust toward God, but be very meticulous and careful that I do exactly what God wants me to do. For example, when it comes to Joshua 6, God said, march around the city once a day for 6 days. Don't march twice. Don't march every other day, but once a day for not 5 days, not 7 days, but 6 days. On the seventh day, march around how many times? Not six, not eight, but seven. And then they do something else. Blow trumpets and do all of that and the walls will fall. They did. That's careful. All right. Now notice at verse 6, this, on a cursory reading, it sounds like the people of the world are reacting. This is their own people. This is the Jews reacting. that be careful to observe, for this is your wisdom and understanding in the sight of the people who will hear these statutes and say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. That's going to be the reaction of the people when they hear the words and they see people obeying. This is a wise and understanding people. They listen to the word of God and they obey. Isn't that interesting? Does your brethren look at you and say, he or she is wise and understanding? And you say, well, what makes you think that? Because they hear the word of God and they obey it. They're careful in obedience. Are you careful in obedience? Good point. Look at verse 7. For what great nation is there that has a God so near to it as the Lord our God, for whatever reason we may call upon him? Now that's kind of a verbose rendering of the New King James rendering. I think all he's saying is, what nation around has got a God like us that we can call on him and he answers and hears our prayers? Does that make sense? In fact, some translations use the word prayer there. There is no other nation around that's got a God like this. And that's why we need to be careful. The powerful God we have and how we need, that suggests why we need to be careful. And a great nation with that, and notice he compares the greatness to the righteous judgments of the laws that are given. All right, so we've learned two things. Respect for the law, don't change it, be careful and obey it. Now verse 9. What's verse 9 tell us? Yeah, careful attention. Be diligently keep yourself, lest you forget the things that your eyes have seen and depart from your heart. In other words, take heed to yourself. Make application to self. Wouldn't it be easy to say, those heathens over there, they don't do that. Or I know the tribe over there, they're not. Take heed to yourself. If Judah takes heed to themselves and Issachar takes heed to themselves and Simeon, if every tribe takes heed to themselves, it's going to be all right. That's part 9a. Look at part 9b, starting at 9b through verse 14. Take these principles and do what? Teach it to your children and to your grandchildren, especially concerning the day that you stood before the Lord in Horeb. The term here is used over 100 times in the book of Deuteronomy. Powerful. That they may learn to fear me. You take the words and teach it, and they will learn to fear me. Here's our term fear. Flag that. Flag it right here because you're going to learn something. They may learn to fear me, and they may teach their children. Now, we'll list what we learned from those in just a moment. Let's go ahead and get down through verse 14, then we'll come back to fear. Talks about coming to the mountain, and they heard the commands of God. And the Lord, I'm reading verse 14, commanded me at that time to teach you the statutes that you might observe them in the land when you cross over to possess. So here's the point of the sermon. I want you to be obedient when you get over there on the other side. I'm going to be dead and gone. But I'm trying to help you so that when you get on the other side, you're still obedient. Does that make sense? And so here's the four things that he learned. I want to tell you, those four things right there are powerful. Those four principles are powerful of respect for the law. Don't change it. Carefully obey it. Apply it to yourself and teach it to your children. You go to church and you read your Bible at home and you read it and you understand it and you say, I'm not going to change it. I'm going to make application to myself. I'm going to obey it carefully and I'm going to teach my children and my grandchildren things are going to be all right. You say, how do you know things are going to be all right? That's what Deuteronomy 6 is going to tell us. We ain't got there yet. That's the next sermon. He's going to say, it's all going to work out all right if you do that. All's going to go well. Make sense? All right, let's talk about fear here just for a moment. From 4:9 and 4:9 and 10, I learned these two lessons. One is teach your children to fear. That's one thing you learn. Or fear has to be taught. Fear must be learned is one of the things. I learned two things from this. So if your children are going to walk in the fear of God, it's because you teach them. If your children don't walk in the fear of God, we hadn't taught them that. Does that make sense? Or maybe we taught them they didn't learn. That's possible. But you say, well, isn't that wonderful? I see so-and-so and their children just are so faithful and they walk in the fear of God. Those children were taught to fear God. They were taught to fear. It's all through the scriptures. Psalm 34, Psalm 33. I can't overemphasize. Make sense? So fear has to be taught, fear has to be learned, and we have to teach our children to fear. Connected with being careful, verse 6, being diligent, that word's not used at verse 29, but it's described at verse 29. All right, now here's the next point. Don't turn to idols. So let's see what we can do here with 15 to 19. Basically, he says that here's our word careful again. Take careful heed to yourself. Here he combines two principles, making application to yourself and being careful. Take careful heed to yourself. But here's the thing that he mentions, that when the Lord spoke to you, you didn't see his form. No, what was the importance of that? Had they, finish my sentence, had they seen when God spoke to them at Horeb, that is at Mount Sinai, a form where they could see, I see him, there's his head and he's shaped like this, and it looks like he's got arms like a man, and what would they do then? Make an idol just like it, to imitate that. So you didn't see his form, because that's in the context. That's what he's dealing with. And so don't make a form of anything, male or female, like a beast or a bird or anything that's in the sea or beneath the sea, whatever. None of that. Make no form of anything. So don't make a god out of anything. That makes sense? There's one true living God. Now, verse 20 to 24, here's the reason. God is a jealous God. God brought you out of the furnace of Egypt. Here again is our statement. Verse 21, the Lord was angry with me for your sake. Flag chapter 3, 26, 137. Make sense? We've been flagging those verses that are all tied. 137, 326, 421. All right. And I must die, and I'm not going to cross over verse 20, was it verse 22? But look down to verse 24. The Lord your God is a consuming fire, a jealous God. Where's that quoted? Hebrews 12, 29. Our God is a consuming fire. Quoted from this passage right here. That's suggesting his jealousy. So don't have other gods. This God that delivered you from the burning from the fiery furnace of Egypt is a jealous God. Now verse 25 to 31. His point here is, when you go into the land and you have children, grandchildren, and then you start serving idols, verse 25, that I'll call heaven as a witness to you that you will not be prolonged, verse 20 but you'll be utterly destroyed. And God will scatter you among the people. What's that a prophecy of? Captivity. And so you're going to have later the Syrian captivity, the Babylonian captivity. That's a prophecy fulfilled some 800 years later. But I want to go back and flag something at verse 27. There will be left a few in number. What do we call that? Make a marginal note. As Brother Haley used to say, God always has and there always will be a remnant. You won't ever find any principle except the fact there's a remnant. There always has been, there always will be. There'll be few in number, but there'll be a remnant. God's always going to have a remnant. All right. Now, let's see where we are. If you turn to idols, I'm going to drive you to another land. And then he talks about they'll come back to God with their whole heart, verse 20, 29, and he'll forgive them because what kind of God is he, verse 31? He's a merciful God. So you're going to go into idolatry. You're going to be driven to foreign lands. You'll be driven out of this land that I promised you and I gave you and et cetera. But you're going out because of your idolatry, and then you'll turn back to me and I'll bring you back because I'm a merciful God. Now, let's talk about evidence that there is no other God. He mentions two things. Let's get to the conclusion, verse 35, that they might know the Lord God himself is God. He mentioned two things. What was done at verse 31-32 at Sinai. What had been done at Sinai when they heard the voice of God speaking to them in the midst of the fire. Verse 34, the deliverance from Egypt with the wonders and signs. That makes sense? The plagues, etc. Crossing the Red Sea. So is there more evidence? Sure, but he just gave two. So here are two evidences. There is no other God. So don't turn to idols. Don't make a god of anything else. The Lord delivered you as a jealous God, and when you do, you're going to be driven out of into captivity. And here's evidence that you don't need to turn because there is no other God but the one true God. All right, now let's go to 41 to 43. Again, at verse 39, he says, there is none other. I want to back up to verse 38 just for a moment. There again is the assurance God has driving out from before you. nations greater and mightier than you. Does that make sense? Do you notice he keeps inserting this assurance into his sermon? You're going to make it. It's going to be fine. You're going to conquer. You'll be able to do it. You've conquered bigger and mightier nations than you before, and you can do it again. All right. Now let's talk about the cities of refuge that are mentioned 41. What's the purpose of the city of refuge? Not mentioned here. Well, it is alluded to, but the details are not given here. Yeah. If there was a murder, if it killed someone, not first-degree murder, but that accidentally they could flee for safety, and there's the city of refuge. Now, three are mentioned at verse 43, Bezer, Ramoth, and Golan. Here they are on the east side of the Jordan River. Golan and Manasseh, Ramoth, Gilead, and Gad, and Bezer and Reuben. Make sense? Now, what about the others? We'll see them more later on. This is all that's mentioned on this side of the river. They hadn't gone and conquered the other side. That's why we're not talking about those cities just yet. They got to get over there and conquer that land. And that's not going to happen until we get through with Deuteronomy. Because this is all happening before they cross the river. Make sense? All right. Now let's back up and finish in the last two or three minutes this introductory speech of Moses. By the way, if you want to make a marginal note concerning those cities of refuge, if you're so disposed to do that, Joshua 20 gives us more details. So we're going to get details when we get to Joshua 20 once they've conquered some territory. And then Numbers 35 is where we saw the instructions recently in our studies, Numbers 35, 9 to 34. And then we're going to see more in Deuteronomy 19, verses 1 to 14. So if you didn't get those, that's Joshua 20, Numbers 35, 9 to 34, and Deuteronomy 19, 1 to 14. All right. So most think that verses 44 to 49 is an introduction to his next speech. Is this something? I don't take that this is just he just continual speech, but there's some time passes between this speech and the next. It happens over 30 days. So was this part of something he said about what his next speech is going to be about, his next time we get together, or was this part of the introduction? I'm not sure. I'll leave you to decide that. But let's see what we've got at 44 to the end of the chapter, 49. This is the law which Moses set before the children of Israel. Now here's the words we talked about. I'm going to define them more in chapter 6. But he calls it, you might underline, law, verse 44. Then he calls them testimonies and statutes and judgments. That's not all these different. Here's statutes over here and here's laws over there and testimonies over here. It's the testimony, the law, the statutes, and the judgment. Same thing referred to. It's a different emphasis. And we'll talk about the difference of all of that in chapter 6. If you particularly in verses 1 and 2, I think, over there. Now, on this side of Jordan in the valley of Beth Peor, we just mentioned that a moment ago, in the land of King Sihon and King Og, I lost my place here. Yeah, whom Moses and the children of Israel defeated, they took possession of the land. So here we have the review of the land. The main thing I wanted to see, though, here's what I'm looking for. I guess it's still back up at verse 44 and 45, that while they're in that territory, this is the law, this is the statutes, this is the judgments, this is the testimony that Moses gave after they came out of Egypt. And so he's about to get into that. So let's get a peek over here. Why do I think that's an introduction to this next sermon? Well, because in chapter 5, you have a review of the Ten Commandments. Does that make sense? That doesn't seem to be the summary of what he just talked about. So it's one of those unfortunate chapter divisions. That's supplied by man, and this is not a reflection on inspiration at all, but I think chapter 5 would have been better to begin at verse 44, because man decided where the chapters are divided. Does that make sense? I think that makes more sense to me. And there's a number of places that in the New Testament where just a verse or two before would have helped divide the chapter right there. And we can do that in our own mind. So I think all we're learning at the end of this is what we're about to see, chapter 5, these are the laws, these are the statutes, these are the judgments, these are the instructions, this is the commandments that God gave Moses at Mount Sinai. Here we are at Beth Peor. Here's what we got over at Mount Sinai. What are they? Well, here we go, chapter 5, next time. Make sense? Chapter 6 will be rich. Go through chapter 5. If you have a little time to prepare, focus more on chapter 6. It is rich. It is rich. We'll get into that next time. We'll stop right there.